welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. We've got a guest in the studio, and we'll introduce him after we're carrying over a question from a caller the last hour. Dave from Mequon. Dave, how you doing? What's your question or comment for Sandy?
Hey, good morning, Earl, Sandy. So, Sandy, this is actually, this question is directed towards you. So my question is this. Obviously, we see what's going on with the war. Ukraine, Russia has made it. They're doing total genocide in Ukraine at this point. China has not denounced Russia at all, whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they have been bragging that they're going to be closer with Russia and with Putin more than ever. And I had sent multiple different links to Sam.
Hey, Dave, hang on a second. And I'm going to announce now that we have a guest, an additional guest in the studio. It's Mr. Tom Nelson. He is a candidate for the United States Senate. Hey, good morning to you, Tom. How you doing?
It's great to be on. This is good.
All right. Let's go back. Go ahead, Dave.
So I guess and what Sandy was referencing is essentially yes. I think at one time China was the idea is that okay we're gonna increase the globalization, we're gonna work hand in hand here, but now I think we're seeing the tipping point. Now we're starting to see the real colors of where China stands. When you have something tragic like this going on, there should be no question as far as what Russia is doing to Ukraine. When you have a country that's not willing to denounce whatsoever, in this case, China, with what's going on, and that they're bragging that they're going to strengthen their ties with Putin, that tells me that's a huge problem coming down the road for the United States.
So listen, Dave, we're going to let Sandy respond, and we're also going to let Tom Nelson, who is a candidate for, United States Senate, respond too.
All right.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, this will be quick, but, we have to look at it from a different perspective. Number one, words and actions are different things. So, I think that whatever Xi is saying it needs to be measured by whatever they're doing. And so far, at least, I think China's been very neutral in terms of its conduct. It hasn't even extended its financial operations into Russia to the extent of totally overcoming the termination of the SWIFT system. And there's been no munitions or other military support being given from China to Russia at this point. And I think China's walking a very fine tightrope. We've sort of pushed Russia and China together in our approach to both countries. To some extent, we've created the bedfellows. I'm not sure they're creating them themselves. They have a very cheery relationship with one another, or at least have up until now. And in fact, it wasn't until February when Xi announced that he said there would be no limits to his partnership with Russia, but there clearly have been limits, and they haven't done much in support of Russia. If he's sent some words and made some lip service in that direction, I'm not too worried about that. And let's see what happens. But I do think in the long run that we have to look at the role the United States has played in creating the circumstances that led to Ukraine. We also have to look at the role the United States will have in the future with respect to Taiwan. And we have to be very careful about how we decide to plant our feet, because these are very dicey questions, and the One China policy has been something that we've followed very carefully, and the situation with Ukraine probably has erupted because back in the Cold War we had very clear rules of engagement with the Soviet Union with respect to how we had a hands-off approach to the Warsaw Pact countries and that whole Eurasian region, and that all came undone after the USSR collapsed, and now we're seeing some of the echoes of that. So I simply say we've got to be careful about who we decide is our enemy and how we behave vis-a-vis those enemies, and I think we ought to be very careful about deciding that we're going to paint China as an enemy, because the implications of that are very severe.
Tom, want to bring you in on talking about this topic. You're clearly running for United States Senate, and if you become the next senator, you're going to be having to deal with these types of issues. What Dave was talking about and the question he was asking is, you know, whether or not we should be embracing China, our nation. Basically, he, along with many other people, look at China as an enemy of our nation. You say what to that?
Well, first I was going to say, wait a second, what does this have to do with being county executive? All right. Yeah. I know. We were asked a similar question in a debate among the candidates several months ago. And they said, you know, should we, it was put on by the fourth CD Democrats. And it said, the question was, it was binary. It was like, should we be friends or enemies or something like that, or frenemies? And I basically said, no. I mean, that's not the question. The question is this, which is, China's been eating our lunch for such a long time. And I think China knows that. I mean, they look at us and how we've responded to them, how we responded to them economically, and the way that they just have us in a pretty tough spot. Wisconsin is one of the top manufacturing states in the country. And because of our trade relations with China, Southeast Asia, we've really taken on the chin after NAFTA. NAFTA is not an agreement with Southeast Asia or China. But after NAFTA, I mean, we had like a net loss of 30 or 40,000 jobs. Where I'm from, the paper valley, I mean, the paper industry was hit just like. So I think what we're dealing with right now, I think China looks at us and says, you know what? There's a pattern there. There's a pattern. You know, they have not stood up to us economically. They know the type of hardships. They know that when we try to press them on trade issues, they just punch back 1, 2, 3, 4 times. And I think that has a lot to do with it, because I think that when it comes to statecraft, there's this type of linkage among the issues. So in that way, I'm not surprised that China has been approaching this issue with abandon. And they kind of know that, you know, China alone, well, that might not be enough. China plus Russia, okay, we can take on the world.
Sandy, you want to respond to that, or?
I'm not in agreement, but I don't think we need to have.
Let me do this before we move forward. Tom, let's talk for people who are hearing you for the first time. Let's talk a little bit about who Tom Nelson is.
Well, I'm the county executive up in the greater Appleton area. Usually when you get south of Fond du Lac County, no one's heard of Outagamie County. But I'm the Outagamie County executive, which is the fifth largest county in the state. I oversee 23 departments, from an international airport to a recycling facility. I've been county executive for 11 years, so for 11 budgets, I've had a AAA bond rating, declining tax rate, and fully fund all of our services. And most of my budgets have either passed on unanimous vote or at least a couple. So I believe I'm best positioned to take on and beat Ron Johnson, because I come from a red part of the state. I won election, re-election 6 times as a legislator and as a county executive. And if I get to Washington, I can get good legislation passed and I can get the government to work, because that's what I've been doing for the last 17 years.
So let's talk about, you know, you wrote a book about the paper mills and the ending of some of them. And let's talk a little bit about the impact that's had on the county that you've come from and the changes that have happened since then.
The fortunate thing is we haven't had to face the same fate as Flint, Michigan, and other communities that are completely dependent on manufacturing. But we have been hit pretty hard. Back in 2000, that's when we peaked in terms of jobs, and since then we've lost at least half a dozen mills, and so that's really hit us hard. And so the reason why I wrote this book is that there was a good story. There was a story about how we took control of our fate. We had a big bank come in to push us into receivership. It was sold to a scrap dealer. Scrap dealer was going to scrap it. And so I joined with the workers that were organized. And because they were organized, we were able to organize against this, prevail upon a judge to give us a second chance. We brought the mill back to life, turned on 3 machines, brought back 300 jobs. And by Q3, they're earning their profit sharing checks. You don't hear stories like that. Now, most don't have that kind of fate, though, but that was an exception. So I wrote a book because I thought it was quite inspiring, and because I think that there were some important important lessons to take from it. Not surprising, this has a lot to do with my campaign. So this book has become a companion of sorts, and it touches on some pretty key issues like manufacturing, jobs, and labor. And sure enough, it turns out that manufacturing, jobs, and labor is one of the top issues in terms of issues, but also in terms of politics, because there was a study that came out last year called Factory Towns that showed the biggest shift in votes away from Democrats to Republicans wasn't urban versus suburban, but were the factory towns and communities that were based on manufacturing with a population plus or minus of 35,000, which is basically my county. And so that is the key, one, to have constructive economic change for families and workers, but it's also the key to win a tough election like this that will determine control of the U.S. Senate.
Well, what's the name of the book again? I remember having read it.
It's called One Day Stronger, How One Union Local Saved a Mill, Changing Industry, and What It Means for Manufacturing.
Which mill was that?
It was the Appleton Coated Mill and Combined Locks. Sure, originally Combined Locks, then it was Appleton Coated, and now it's Midwest Paper.
Yeah, I was in my early legal career, I was representing Bergstrom Paper and Tilmany
Pulp. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Tilmany Pulp and Paper, and a whole bunch of those mills that you now describe as being gone, or at least renamed and owned elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Mr. Tom Nelson, who's a candidate for what?
For U.S. Senate.
I know U.S. Senate, but U.S. Senate. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. It's Fridays. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And we have a special guest, Mr. Tom Nelson, who is a candidate for the United States Senate. Sandy, I think you had a question.
Well, Tom, it's great meeting you. I've heard great things about
Thank you.
What do you think is going to grab the state's attention with respect to this U.S. Senate campaign? So far, you know, I think it's been sort of below the fold, mm-hmm. on the front page, if there, in terms of what the amount of attention people are getting. And so what do you think will be the centerpiece of conversation, and what do you have to say about that?
Well, what we're making a centerpiece of the conversation has a lot to do with the work, and not just the book, but also my service growing up in a blue-collar town, a paper mill, a mill town, and that is jobs and the economy and the future of manufacturing, which is the base. And most jobs here in the state are connected some way to manufacturing. I mean, you've done some work in the industry, and you know the multiplier effect is substantial, 3-1, 4-1. So every one paper job translates into 3 or 4 in the community. And when you're talking about a community the size of Combined Locks, 2,500, 3,000 people, I mean, everyone is connected to that. Now, I think the reason why this is going into non-manufacturing areas, and I believe that this is because if you look at one of my opponents who's been on TV since Halloween, a lot of his messaging is on China and is on the economy, and everyone's come out with their economic paper. And that's fine, that's good, though, but I think it really validates what we've been thinking, that this is and could be a dominant issue. Now, the reason why it's connected more and more is because this is a driver for inflation, the fact that we don't control our supply chain, and so you lose, you know, key ingredients, semiconductors. We invented the semiconductor, and yet it's all made in one region of China. So you've got a pandemic that comes through. You don't have production where it needs to satisfy demand across the world. You've got a major problem. So you have all this pent-up demand from people who weren't consuming during the pandemic, but you don't have enough supply. So that drives inflation. And then you got corporate America, who's used this opportunity to make record profits. I mean, the billion of this country made $1.6 trillion just during a pandemic. So people hear this and see this like, yeah, you know, there's something wrong. Aha. But now you got the clash. Now you got the contrast. A millionaire like Ron Johnson has no idea how it is to put a roof over your head and work for a living, who passes tax cuts that enriches him and his donors, and who continues to support outsourcing, doesn't seem to care about manufacturing, doesn't seem to care about his hometown Oshkosh, losing 1,000 UAW workers to South Carolina. So you can see how not only is this an important issue and it goes to the livelihood of most people in the state, though, but it also sets up to be an ideal contrast with the opponent, Ron Johnson, because of his record. I also believe, despite all the silly stuff that he's been saying for the last 11 years, despite all of his negligence during the pandemic and as chair of the Homeland Security Committee, I really believe what's going to come down are going to be the bread and butter issues, the economic issues, the tax policy issues, the trade issues that make a difference in working families' lives. Because, never forget this, campaigns are not about the candidates. Campaigns are about the voters.
So whether it's you or whoever is going to eventually wind up winning the seat, it's your belief that Ron Johnson is done.
I wouldn't say he is done, but I think if there's going to be a Republican incumbent who's going to lose this year, it's going to be Ron Johnson. People say, well, Ron Johnson, he sounds silly, he must be dumb. No, if you get elected to the U.S. Senate twice, you're not dumb. And I think the secret ingredient that I think really sets apart people in business, and I think Sandy may or may not agree with this, I'd like to hear about that, is timing. You know, the saying about how it's better to be lucky than good. And I think someone like Ron Johnson, who happened to have a father-in-law who is a billionaire who gave him a business to run, decides to run for the U.S. Senate in what turns out to be a pretty good Republican year. Keep in mind, when he ran in 2010, he got in at the last moment, a week or 2 weeks before the Republican convention, where he took the endorsement. So he's close enough to the election to know, aha, I think this is going to be a good year for Republican. I think I'll run for the U.S. Senate. It's going to cost me $9 million, but I can get $10 million in stock for my company.
Well, conservative talk radio helped push him over
yes,
the top,
it did.
Too.
It is. And that's why
I didn't even know who he was.
That's why I'm trying to come on the Earl show as many times as possible, because this is going to be the reverse effect. You know what I'm saying? For this right-wing talk radio, it's going to be common sense, Wisconsin, taking on the politricksters. I can't believe we're like 20 minutes into this and you haven't said politricksters yet. I'm
well,
so disappointed.
You know, I don't think that includes you. Sandy, go ahead.
Well, I'm interested. I think that I'm interested in you said that these issues are what's going to be important. What are your positions on the issues then, though, that differentiate you? Or, I mean, you know, we've got you talk about trade. What are we going to do about it?
Right.
You talk about the semiconductors being made in China. Mm-hmm. Well, We were complicit with that. It wasn't our government that was complicit. No, it was our industry. We had a trade policy that permitted it.
Exactly. Well, that's why it was the government. The government. Globalization was not inevitable. These are the policies of the U.S. government. Here's one thing that separates us from the rest of the industrialized world. We're one of the only countries, if not the only country, without a national industrial strategy. And that's one of the reasons why countries like Japan and West Germany ate our lunch in the 1970s and 1980s, because we just opened up our markets and said, take whatever you want from us. The book by David Halberstam, The Great Reckoning. The Reckoning talks about the nascent emergence of the auto industry and how part of the Marshall Plan, we built up industry in Japan. And it got to the point where by the 70s or 80s, yes, manufacturing may or may have been complicit, but the government policy was with respect to investment, with respect to tax policy, with respect to trade policy, fueled this degradation of the manufacturing industry, to say nothing about how our policies completely impaled the labor movement of the 70s and 80s, Taft-Hartley. If you want to look at the beginning of the decline of the American labor movement, it was about 1947. And so right then it was 1 out of 3 private sector jobs were organized. Now, was it 6%, 7%? It wasn't inevitable.
Sandy?
I don't want to debate. I think that the inevitability of globalization was the result of World War II, the Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean. The United States came out of World War II, the only surviving economy, the only surviving manufacturing center, and we had a 25-year honeymoon that permitted us to enter into labor contracts that were disproportionately high, and we ended up with a situation in the world. So, I mean, I think I do disagree about the inevitability of globalization and whether it was handed to us by the government. The question is now, what do we do about the globalization that exists?
I think that the finger you're pointing is incorrectly pointed, but I do believe that we now have globalization, and what do we do about it? And can we reverse it? Mm-hmm. Is that a good idea? Or are there other things that we should be doing? And I believe there are probably other things we should be doing.
And whether or not globalization has really been beneficial to the average American citizen. And I think we can say that they lower prices, and maybe that's the benefit of globalization. But again, if you live in a state like Wisconsin, you know, in a city like Milwaukee, where, you know, globalization is, you know.
The paper industry has suffered consequences much more than globalization. There's been worldwide trends that have affected it. And there was also the problem of the historic ownership of them and the consolidation, the roll-ups that occurred, and the way that the financing of them changed, and their ability to withstand the volatility in the marketplace and the world pulp market. There's a lot of issues that are associated with it. And the paper industry has never been something that wasn't subject to the globalized problems.
Let's
do this. We've got to go to break, Tom. So when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. I promise you, we'll let you respond. Tom Nelson, a candidate for United States Senate, Sandy Williams, and you, 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. You know, I think it's safe to say that, Tom, you and I have crossed paths several times now, and every time I have a chance to, you know, sit down and hear you, I'm impressed. You're a good guy, but if you had only had a little personality, we would.
What, because I'm Swedish?
No. So that's a mild attempt at humor. Tom Nelson is a candidate for the United States Senate. He's got a great personality, by the way. And Sandy Williams is here. And, you know, as you go through these debates, I've always said debates, you know, you're going to get ridiculous questions. And how do you handle that? I mean, it's a serious position that you are running for, and there's serious issues on the table, but people who are having the debates don't want to deal with the serious issues.
Well, I think, you know, there are challenges, because I think once upon a time, it was good enough to get your name on the ballot, to start campaigning maybe a couple weeks before signatures came out. Go around, give some speeches. You would go to a town square and 1,000 people would show up. And I think those are the old days. But now I think you also have a responsibility, not just, you know, putting together a plan to win an election, though, but you also have the work of engaging the electorate. Because this day and age, there's hundreds of things for people to do besides politics. And off there, I told a story about how my friend Steve Kagan, who was the congressman up in Northeast Wisconsin after he had lost, he was at a store and, you know, he was talking about something, asked him about a position on an issue. And he said, that person said, politics, that's just for rich people. And I think that there has been this major disconnect between politics because of that viewpoint. And so there's all these issues that are coming together, like campaign finance. Keep in mind, this was Russ Feingold's seat, and he made campaign finance and ethics. And there's a reason why he did that. Yeah. No,
so
you were trying to get in.
So let me ask you, the seats are basically for sale, unfortunately. And you are not going to be able to match the financial resources of several of the candidates, or basically almost all of them. How do you then compete?
Well, you compete on message. You compete on going to as many, you know, have as many opportunities like this and try to engage with as many audiences as possible. But this was also the reason why I got in so early. We got in October of 2020. I believe that
might have been the first one.
Yeah, not just the first one for this seat, but first one for the 2022 U.S. Senate cycle, aside from the incumbents. And I got in because I knew I was going to go up against a lot of money. And there isn't a single U.S. Senate race, I guess, in this country where there isn't someone who can cut a check for $3, $4, $10, $20 million. And so someone like me, you know, the little old son of a Lutheran pastor from Little Chute, Wisconsin, I don't have, you know, I can't go to my retired Lutheran pastor dad and say, hey, can I have $3 or $4 million to go up on television for the next 6 months? So you have to find ways to do it. But let me tell you this too, the political graveyard is littered with people who thought that they could come in and buy an election, because in the final analysis, I believe, call me an optimist, you can't kid a kid or you can't kid a voter that they will ultimately see through that. And so it's up to me to come through, to have enough time, enough practice to come with a good message and get that message out to as many people as possible, and then have just enough money left over at the end to put some horsepower behind that and get the message out as far and wide as possible.
Sandy?
No, I'm sure that's true. I think that politics today is different than it was in 1945, and it's different than it was in 1965 too. And the way that politicians convey their message on a statewide basis is different than it is on the local basis. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it does have to do with campaigning and the ability to mm-hmm. reach out and make contact with people and have it be real. Mm-hmm. And so I think that these people who think they can come in and buy elections frequently make lose some money.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've traveled around the state I don't know how many different times, right?
We did a 72-county listening session tour in 43 days last year. And that's just one instance. I ran for lieutenant governor back in 2010, probably hit most of the counties there. I was born just outside the state, but I spent the first 4 years of my life in western Wisconsin when my dad he took his first call as a Lutheran pastor at a small country church, and then grew up in the Fox Valley, and now I represent the Fox Valley as a county executive.
So tell me how much the differences are between what's happening in rural America, rural Wisconsin, and in this city. Milwaukee.
Well, I think that, you know, I found on my 72-county listening session tour, I found that, yes, there are differences, obviously. I mean, that's why you asked the question. But there are a lot of similarities. And I found that in the big, big issues, like, let's say, healthcare or income inequality, there's a lot of similarity. So if you don't have health insurance and you're in Milwaukee, you might not be able to go to that hospital across the street. Now, you could have all the money in the world in Tigerton, Wisconsin, and it's going to be 30, 40 miles away from a hospital, so you also don't have access to health care. If there's income inequality in the city, there's income inequality on the farm that has just been devastated. We've lost 70% of our dairy farms in the last 20 years. So there are economic justice issues in the countryside just as there are in the city. And so that's why I like to focus on bread and butter issues, because the old school Democrats, according to the Washington Post, I'm a throwback candidate. You know, we used to focus on bread and butter issues, things that made a big difference in people's lives, because that's what campaigns come down to. They're about the voters, not the candidates.
Well, I'm Sandy, hang on a second. Yeah. Who do we have on the line?
CJ from Stoughton's calling in.
All right. CJ. How you doing, CJ?
I am good. Thank you, Earl. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call and ask a couple of questions. Mr. Nelson wins the seat, I don't think he will, because I think Ron Johnson's been proven right on a lot of issues.
Name one.
Do you believe that, like Oshkosh, why do you think Oshkosh went to South Carolina?
They went to they went to South Carolina to make a quick buck. That contract was won because of the workers, because that was won by Oshkosh Defense. And of course, when you win these contracts, especially one the size that it is, which is up to $10 billion, there has to be more than just numbers, what your bid is. And so the workers up in Oshkosh won that. Oshkosh Corporation, so Oshkosh Truck is a subsidiary of Oshkosh Corporation. Oshkosh Corp says, no, we're going to go down to South Carolina. And by the way, we're going down to South Carolina because we need 900,000 square feet. And there isn't a place in Wisconsin with 900,000 square feet. What are you talking about? This is the Midwest. We've got nothing but land. What they want to do is this. Let me finish, sir. The reason why they're doing this in South Carolina is they are saying they need more space than they actually do. And the reason why is in 2027 is when the union contract is due, and they will not have the obligation to go to carry forward, not just on that contract, but other contracts. And they're going to shift the production away from here and down the South, where they are 45th in wages and 45th in education. It is a downward spiral, not because of anything Wisconsin is doing wrong, but because corporate America is beyond greedy and they don't answer to their workers, and that is wrong.
Go ahead, CJ, quickly.
Well, I tell you what, I believe you're wrong, because our tax base is driving them out just the way your party has driven companies to China. Do you believe the corporate tax rate should go to 28%?
Look, let's go to the beginning. You asked about the tax base. That's just completely false. In my county, I have passed 11 budgets. Most of those budgets, if not all of them, have had a declining tax rate. They've been having a declining tax rate because we can lower the tax rate because the tax base, the economic value has gone right up through the roof. So here I am, a progressive Democrat in a red county who is, for whatever reason, able to lower the declining tax rate for 7 years, have a balanced budget, and get it passed on a near unanimous vote. And let me tell you, the Outagamie County Board of Supervisors, they're not all Democrats.
All right, well, CJ, go quickly.
Do you believe the border should be enforced? Southern border? Do you believe the southern border, the wall should be built?
Well, look, of course we need to have border enforcement.
Thank you very much for the call, CJ. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, of course we need to have border enforcement, but I think what's going on here is you have issues like Title 42, which is nothing more than dog whistling by the Trump administration. Title 42, which says that we are not going to let people in the country because of COVID, and yet CDC has rolled back all of these guidelines, and then they're saying we need to keep it in place. And let me tell you why I'm so disappointed with Democrats. There isn't a single U.S. Senate candidate Democrat in the country that has been asked that actually opposes Title 42 and supports the president. And I think, look, if Democrats can't stand up for that, what good are we?
You know,
Tom, actually, I wanted to interject, Tom, with what you said earlier about the policies for dealing with workers in the state, I think is an important shift in the Democratic Party, because I think the problem that the Democrats had that elected Donald Trump was the tendency to use a mosaic of colors, essentially, to have special interest groups that were all essentially ethnically based, and to ignore the rural, the social and economic issues which were shared by all.
Exactly.
Across all those ethnic lines and across all those geographic boundaries. You know, what needs to happen in the country is for us not to worry about gerrymandering so much based on the location of Democrats, because we need to have Democrats and people who will vote in a knowing fashion all over the state and not just in urban areas.
Well, I also believe, that if you did have fair maps and if you did have campaign finance reform, I believe the state assembly, which I was in the state assembly for 3 terms, and I know a lot of the folks down there, I believe that if you had fair maps, if you had campaign finance reform, which means basically a level playing field, the state assembly would be plus or minus 2 seats Democrat or Republican.
But I do believe, and you're on the right course here, that it has to do as well with the attention Democrats have paid to the problems in the rural areas and not just the urban areas. And I think I think the right has successfully painted the Democratic Party, whether it's right or not, as an urban party and not as a party that represents the interests of people across the state. And you are doing exactly the right thing by demonstrating to the people across the state that they share problems.
Thank you.
that need to be addressed.
Thank you.
So listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. Tom Nelson is here, and he's candidate for United States Senator. And Sandy Williams has nothing else to do. He's just hanging around. We'll be right back.
That's kind of
true.
Welcome back to the Early Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. In the studio, special guest is Tom Nelson. Man, we got to get you back. I've always said again and again and again, every time I have an opportunity to exchange have other people get to meet you and hear you, I always get calls back about you. So that's
Thank you. That's
really a good sign.
But I just want to say something right now.
Go ahead.
I'm a little disappointed because we're on 50 minutes doing this, and I still have not heard the word. I want to hear it.
Politrickster.
Politrickster. Love that.
But I don't put you in that category, man, because you talk straight. You know, you're not misleading somebody. And I think I'm a pretty decent judge of character. Except for Sandy, but
look at this guy. You come and give him an hour of your time, you know, and this is what this was
more than an hour.
but
it's three, and it seems like a day and a half.
but I just think, man, you're straight.
At least it
shooter.
Gets you out of the house, right?
You're a straight shooter, and we need more straight shooters.
Thank you.
In the society, Sandy, you wanna got a question you wanna ask?
Well, I'm interested in just how you get this message across about tying together the urban and rural mm-hmm. areas, because clearly in Wisconsin the purple votes are in the suburbs and on the edge of the cities, right? I mean, you can
well, I think the strategy
and you're pursuing Democrats in the primary, and so obviously that's maybe one of the problems we have in elective politics now is. You start out by dealing just with the people who denominate themselves as Democrats, and then you have to win the state.
Right. But I think in my situation, I think the challenge I have, the circle I have to square, is I can go and say, among other things, I'm a very strong candidate to run against Ron Johnson because I come from a red part of the state where I've won election, re-election six times, three as legislator, three as a county executive. But here's the rub, is in the primary, the geographic base of Democratic primary voters are 2 hours away. So I have that. So going back to the question about reaching out to rural parts, one, you should do it because when you get elected, you serve the entire state. You represent everyone. But I think as far as a short-term political strategy in the primary, part of this is to start turning that red to purple and purple to blue because if I'm going to win, I need to pull out as many blue votes from the countryside in my neighborhood as possible. I mean, I know that when I get up against Ron Johnson and, you know, his voters are my voters. And I know it's because I talk to them, but when they're given a choice, Tom Nelson or Ron Johnson, they're going to come my way. I just got to get through this primary.
Are you both Swedish or Norwegian, do you think?
Well, it's a good thing my Swedish grandmother's not alive to hear that. Yeah, Swedish.
But not Johnson. I mean, you've got this.
Oh, yeah, Scandinavia. Yeah. So you've got like the clash of the Nordic. We have to think of like the Nordic summit or the Nordic.
Yeah, this could be like a battle of Vikings.
So are things heating up, man? I mean, you've been at this a while.
Yeah, I think what we had to do to really get people engaged, particularly at the local level, was getting through the April elections. I think that was something, because I'd call people and say, yeah, you know, come back to me after April. Or, yeah, I think we'll do a debate, but come back to me after April. So I think right now it's beginning. I think like each day you can feel there's more and more interest. There's more and more engagement. I mean, on my social media, I went from 30 to 35,000 followers in 3 or 4 days. And I was stuck at 20,000 for 3 or 4 months. So there's these little metrics, these little indicators in different parts of the campaign that are starting to uptick. And so you're thinking, okay, so there was a reason why I'd start doing this 18 months ago. You know, you've laid the, you know, you've kind of, you know, plowed the groundwork and you're in a position now to reap the harvest, hopefully, and win the primary and go on to beat Ron Johnson.
You know, when you talk about name recognition right now, the Democratic Party, and the candidates that are, you know, running alongside you, where do you fit in that? You think you're making strides across the state?
I think so. I think there's a good piece of news. I'm the only one who's not been on television yet. And, no, I mean, I'm not the only one who's not a millionaire, not a billionaire, not with a lot of name recognition. And yet, in the last poll, I was in a pretty sound third position. So by not having none of the above, and to still be in that position, I think speaks to our grassroots that people know about me. You got a good, you know, decent share of people that have heard me. And now it's just to seal the deal, come up with a good message, keep going around, work in the countryside, work in the cities, and then have enough money left over so when people are engaged and paying attention and are going to make their decision that we're up on TV, we're competitive, we're getting our message out.
Because so you said come up with a good message. By now, so the message changes as you get closer?
No, I think it comes. I think what you do is you kind of refine things. You talk about, you kind of start with these big economic issues, which is in my bailiwick, and I believe that this is going to be a decisive, not divisive, a decisive issue. And so it comes down to how you are talking about it, what kind of audiences, who's receptive, you know, who's interested in hearing about issue A or issue B. So in some respects, it's kind of at a micro level, but you're still working and trying to find these messages that tie everything together. People talk about how Democrats need a rural message or an urban message, or my favorite is, what's your lane? Well, the statewide campaigns that are successful are the ones that don't have 1 out of 12 lanes, but have 10 out of 12 lanes that can have a statewide message. It's what Tony did back in 2018. It's what Joe Biden did back in 2020. And that's the secret. It's going to take time, but you're going to feel more and more engagement just because, of course, you're getting closer and closer to the primary. More and more people are engaged.
Well, I think you've got an impressive shot at it. I mean, I think my hope is that politics turns in the direction of electing capable people, and not people who simply get name recognition for whatever reason, you know. And so I think sticking substantive, and sticking to issues that cross over all different groups based on unified financial and economic interests is really the ticket. And I think that's where the Democratic Party's gone wrong in the past, and you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, in the twinkling of an eye, it's going to be here, right? I mean, yeah. After all that hard work, you know, I haven't had, I think I've only had one other candidate on, and he is, you know, certainly not thought about as one of the front runners. Nice guy. But I haven't reached out to the others. I'm impressed with you. I've said that from the beginning. The more people get to see you and hear you and know you, the more I think they'll realize that's just what we need to have. You know, we need to have more Tom Nelsons, as Sandy just said, running for office. And what do you want to say in the last couple minutes, man?
Well, I need your vote. Thank you for having me on. This is our fourth time, and this is an opportunity I need to try to make my case. And so I hope that my case was at least somewhat persuasive. Hope to get your consideration at least, and hopefully your vote. I mean, we can do this. We can win this seat. And doing so, this is not just Wisconsin seat. Well, first of all, this is Wisconsin seat, but in some respects, this is America's seat, because this is one of the most competitive elections in the country. And with a 50-50 U.S. Senate, this could very well determine control of the U.S. Senate. And that is an awesome responsibility and burden that the voters, the good people of this state, bear. And I think that's pretty exciting, too.
Well, I think we got to wrap it up, huh, Sam? Okay, we've got 1 minute. Sandy, you've got all the 30 seconds.
Take us out. Take us out, Sandy. Take us out.
Well, we should.
Take us home.
We should sing a song. It could be like that Jimmy Durante with a coat over my shoulder. Yeah. No, really, I'm enthused about it, Tom. I think that what I've been saying on this show before is the lack of nuance and the lack of substance in politics today. And I think you've got that. I think you're a student of policy, and that's what we need more of. We don't need more Ron Johnsons.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, we got to go. Thank you as always, Sandy. I'll see you again on Monday. Yep. Thank you, Tom. I don't know the next time, but we'll there'll be a next time.
Next week.
Got to go to a break.
Tomorrow.
We're not going to a break. Got to go. 844-967-2789. Have a great weekend. See you guys on Monday.